welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, next week on 10th of September is World Suicide Prevention Day. And to follow up, a Concert for Life formed in 2015 to raise money. You've decided to do a sequel after discovering some pretty shocking statistics on Indigenous suicide. Can you tell us some of the reasons why you thought it was so important to stage this concert next week?
Well, yeah, we did the first concert in 2015, also on World Suicide Prevention Day. And that was spurred on by a tragedy in my own family. My godson took his own life at the age of 24. And, you know, that was obviously a tragedy for everybody in his family and all of us. But it made me realise what a massive issue it is. And the statistics, you know, in Australia are not good at all. That concert was a great success. We raised lots of money and everybody said, look, let's do it again. We decided this time we would raise money for Indigenous suicide because the statistics are terrible. And I think there's certainly people with lots of goodwill and want to spend money on the issue. It's finding programs that make a big difference. So we identified a program which trains psychologists at Curtin University, and then they're sent into high-risk remote communities where they can do a lot of good. And it's a fantastic program because every $10,000 we raise will sponsor one student for their whole studies, give them a scholarship. They can then go out into these communities and make a real difference for the next goodness knows how many years. So we think it's a really tangible way of making a difference. And like before, it's the Sydney Symphony Orchestra and the Australian Opera musicians are all coming together with Simon Tedeschi, who's a fantastic pianist, jazz pianist and classical pianist, the Sydney Children's Choir, Gondwana Voices. It's a real gala event. Everybody's just giving their services for free for this cause.
Just reading some of this research, 40% of childhood deaths in Indigenous communities are suffered by suicide. That there's been, just over the last few decades, a huge spike in the number of suicides. The likelihood of Aboriginal people self-harming is six times greater than non-Aboriginal people. With such urgent statistics, can you tell us a little bit about how are these sort of issues going to be addressed?
Well, I think that's a big question, and that's what everybody's trying to do. And government is trying to sort out the problem too, but not always with evidence-based, thoroughly researched programs. And this program, which Tracy Westerman has developed, really ticks all the boxes. And Tracy, she's got incredible credentials. She was the first Aboriginal woman, Aboriginal person to complete a psychology degree at Curtin University. And that's really something special. And she's spent a life just working on mental health issues with, you know, First Nation people. And it's really paid off.
What's also interesting is in Tracy's research, and we've discovered that there's actually very different causes for Indigenous suicide than for non-Indigenous suicides, and that there needs to be programs that sort of target the different triggers for suicide within the Indigenous community. I mean, Tracy, I've read some of her articles in Indigenous X. She wrote a really interesting piece and talks about the contrast of, while in non-Aboriginal people, depression is an established cause of pathway to suicide with about 50% of cases. In the Indigenous study, she found that 60% of the suicide risk is attributable to impulsivity. Yeah, is this why it's important that we have psychologists and people with training on the ground in rural and regional areas to be able to tackle different causes to the suicide epidemic we have in this country?
Absolutely. You know, I'm not an expert at all, and I'm relying very much on what I read and what Tracy's doing. But it's clear that there's a big problem with connection, lack of connection. And, you know, the more we try and give a solution that might suit us as new Australians, to try and force fit that solution to Indigenous community, probably the least successful it will be. And so there's clearly a problem that Indigenous Australians feel a lack of connection with what is modern day Australia, and you feel powerless to really to be part of that. And I think the answer is not to make them force fit them into what we want. It's to find people that understand that and can go into those situations and work with them. And so that's why there have to be Indigenous psychologists doing that job.
I mean, we've seen other community initiatives from artistic communities, such as the Choir of Hard Knocks, which did a really good job of, you know, providing personal optimism for many of those who are homeless. Do you think that there's many ways in which, you know, we can have more artistic philanthropy to really tackle sort of social disadvantage?
Oh, I hope so. Look, for me as a musician, we have a responsibility to use the skills and the talents we have, you know, for social good. What's the point of it otherwise? You know, of course, you know, we play music because we love playing music, and you know, it's an incredibly fulfilling thing to do. It's no good just doing concerts at the Opera House for our regular subscribers, much as we love them. We've got to go and find people that need what we do even to a great degree. And for example, with my work with the Sydney Symphony, I do work in prisons. We do a lot of work with schools. You've got to use music, I think, as a tool to effect social change, and however you can. And all my colleagues I know feel the same way. We just want to use what we've got to do some good. And it's interesting because I think a concert like that, when you're doing a concert for a special reason like that, the music takes on a different relevance. All the joy, all the pathos in the music, all the highs and lows are emphasized even more, both because the connection between you and the audience is so special because of the cause.
We're having some really amazing Indigenous performers in a range of arts. So, you know, we've seen a lot of success, you know, in film and also music. People like Deborah Cheatham. How do you, as music, as a way of sort of tackling Indigenous alienation? I remember an experience when I took my car to a panel beater and I got a lift home by the apprentice, and he told me, and he just got in the car and he just started playing Andre Bocelli. And he was like, I was living in Northern Territory and I was a very angry person, and then I heard this music. I just thought that was a really fascinating story. I was really glad that, you know, he was able to share that story to a stranger. I just thought it sort of told the story of how, you know, music has that power ability of people to be able to understand.
That's amazing. I mean, everybody has these prejudices against classical music, think that sort of person won't understand it, and this sort of person will. And it's, again, when we do this visit to the prison every year, there's the people that have generally no knowledge of classical music, but they relate to it in an incredibly direct way. We can play any music to them, you know, and they listen probably better than any other audience because it really touches them in a very direct way. I think the problem is often the way we talk about music, and we make it out to be some extremely complicated and difficult art form that you've got to have years and years of experience to understand. And this program we're doing next Tuesday is an example of music that is instantly accessible. It's beautiful music and it's profound music, but it's instantly accessible for a Pavan. Gershwin Rhapsody in Blue, you know, it's one of the first sort of crossover jazz classical pieces with Simon, who's one of the few classical pianists that can play jazz. And so
To prevent it sort of being seen as inaccessible or something that is only for people with a certain sort of refined taste.
And that's right. And the way that we should behave in concert. When Mozart wrote music, when Beethoven wrote music, the audience were talking and they were walking in and out and they were probably even eating their lunch at the same time. You know, now we frown on those sort of things, you know, sometimes for good reason, but not always. And mostly as musicians, we just want people to be engaged. We want to be able to communicate with them. We want to touch their hearts.
So just tell us a little bit about the lineup of the show. I believe you've got Simon Tedeschi playing the Gershwin, the Rhapsody in Blue, a lot of performers from Sydney Symphony Orchestra and Opera Australia. What sort of experience will the audience encounter on Tuesday night?
Well, hopefully they'll experience real coming together of musicians from different orchestras. So the orchestra is a full-size symphony orchestra made up of Sydney Symphony plus Opera Australia players, plus a few others from the Sydney Symphony Fellowship Program, and even a couple of students from the Con that I've got in. And Simon Tedeschi, then there's a Sydney Children's Choir and Junior Men's Choir. That's about 65 choristers. And they have voices of angels. There's nothing like that. It always brings a lump to my throat when I hear them sing. It's an all-round gala concert with a bit of everything in it. And the music is gorgeous. It's profound. It will make you smile and make you cry. It's just an all-round experience is what we're trying for.
Oh, excellent. So if people are interested, what's the best place to get tickets for the concert?
A good question. And the best place is to go to concertforlife.com.au. That's all one word, concertforlife.com.au. And they can get all the information and buy tickets there. It's on Tuesday next week, the 10th of September at 8 p.m. at Verbruggen Hall, which is a beautiful, intimate venue. It's a great place to go to a concert, a really lovely place to be. And we just hope as many people will come along as possible.